2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
MLB Daily Dispatch brought to you by DFSArmy.com. Not signed up with us yet? Make sure you do so. Go to the website, use the promo code WIN, W-I-N. Get yourself 7 free days to check everything that we got going on. And when I say, what a better time to join now, I am not kidding, folks. We've got the Open this week, as they like to say. I know they do it overseas there. So this is the big golf tournament that we got going on. Our domination station can build up to 150 lineups for you in a matter of seconds. You can get that done if you're a big multi-entry guy. You can also use the domination station for our NASCAR contests and all sorts of other sports that we got going on right now. Check out our MLB VIP section where we got all sorts of great tools that you can use as well. Once again, promo code WIN, W-I-N, gets you 7 free days. And if you like us after that, use the promo code PODCAST and get 20% off each month of your subscription. Folks, you can't find a better deal than that in the industry. All right, let's get to who we are. I'm Al Walsh. Find me on Twitter at 14a.walsh. Find my co-pilot, Keith Hall, at Boomer's DFS Daddy. Good day for the Hall man yesterday. But I got to tell you, it's a Kershaw day today. I think we all know what that means.
Yeah, we can fade him.
No. Well, what I was going to say, I think that we all know what that means. We're going to have a good discussion because we're always on both sides of the fence of this. But
let's just settle this on the scoreboard.
Okay.
We'll do I'm creating it right now. I'll just I'll send you. Do you want to put money on it or not?
Yeah, we could let's see.
$5?
$5 is fine. I mean, we could have went, you know, 10. We could go whatever dollar amount, but sure. Whatever the dollar amount is, I am in.
All right, let's go 535.
535? Okay.
You'll go a 535 head-to-head with me not playing Kershaw and you playing Kershaw.
Yeah, I probably will. I don't think there's any need to, but I would.
I'm not going to take that much of your money.
Oh, come on. You're going to take that much of my money.
All right, we'll do a $10 head-to-head.
Fair enough.
So
significantly less, but I just know I would go that high for my man Kershaw.
Well, I'm glad that you have that kind of confidence because I have that kind of confidence that you don't need him.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Sent.
Delivered. So you'll be able to check that out tonight, and that'll be something fun that we can have. But yeah, we definitely have a lot of great stuff on the slate today. It's a 15-game slate. Always look forward to these. But yeah, it is interesting. I guess we should just start with the pitching since we've already kind of touched on it a little bit. Kersh, I know we usually go with the stacks, but hey, I'm all about Segways, my friends. Kershaw tonight going up against the Chicago White Sox. Now, we do know, and we actually have seen the White Sox do very well against left-handed pitching before. We saw it with Chris Sale this season where the White Sox really roughed him up big time. The big difference here, though, for me is that a lot of these White Sox just haven't seen Kershaw before. And again, I think that's something huge that, you know, I don't think anybody's really going to talk about. The money line is up to, let's see, I know it was at 300 last night currently.
It is at 325 currently.
Oh, even
but
better.
But here's, hold on. We talk about this a lot. Now, I'm not discrediting Kershaw, okay? But you also have to think that has something to do with the Dodgers offense going against Miguel Gonzalez as well.
Absolutely.
So it's not like the 325 is all based on Kershaw.
Yeah.
A big chunk of it is, but not all.
Yeah, and you see the over under too at 8.5. I think, you know, yeah, that all ties in well, you know, going with that. But, you know, again, too, I mean, look, you got plenty of things to go against Kershaw with. Again, with the White Sox numbers against left-handed pitching, Kershaw is not going to get to face a pitcher like he usually does. So that might bring some of his strikeouts down. Again, I like having that assurance with Kershaw on the mound. I just think that, you know, it's very tough to get, you know, pitching down to a science. A guy like Kershaw usually comes in and does what he needs to do. Over his last three starts, he has averaged, Keith, 67 FanDuel points in those three starts. You know, his last one, he went a complete game against the Kansas City Royals, which, you know, we've seen hasn't been such an easy thing over the last month or so. So, again, Kershaw, best in the game, best stuff. I can't come off this guy ever when he's on the slate, and tonight will be no different.
Look, I'm not saying that he's not a good pitcher. I don't want people to think that that's what I'm arguing. He's the best pitcher in the game, and his price reflects it for a reason. But what I am saying is, in the summer, because it's the summer, because the ball is quote-unquote juiced and flying out of the yard, you don't need, if you put the right bats around him, you do not need a $14,000 pitcher on DK in order to win. Now, do I think he's the best play on the board? Absolutely. I'm talking from a pure game theory standpoint. If you put the right bats around him, you do not need him to win. And honestly, that has everything to do with the fact of who else is on the board. I mean, you've got Robbie Ray, you've got Brad Peacock, who's been pitching well. You've got Clevinger going against the freaking Giants, who can't seem to freaking hit the ball out of the ballpark. You've got Tyson Ross going against Baltimore, who can't seem to freaking swing a bat without, you know, grounding into double plays. I mean, you got Blake Snell, who's going against Oakland. I mean, Antonio Sensatella's under 6K on FanDuel, and he's going against San Diego. Now, with a lot of these guys, yes, you do need to get a lot of good production out of your bats. If I were to fade Kershaw today, it would probably be with a guy like, hell, you even got Michael Wacha going against the Mets, and Wacha's actually kind of, I think, looked good.
9 strikeouts in each of his last two.
Yeah, Walker's looked really good his last three games. And it's not like those are bad offenses. You got Miami, Washington, and Cincinnati. Now, Miami hasn't done well lately, but they were kind of hot before the All-Star break. Washington and Cincinnati are both very, very, very good offenses, top 5 offenses in the National League. So it's not like he's just, you know, it's not like he got the Padres and the Braves or, you know, whoever is low on the totem pole. So,
well, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I feel like there's a couple of guys, you know, some of these guys have some warts that we can bring up with them too. Robbie Ray, who's going up against the Reds tonight, obviously not the best ballpark for him to be pitching in, but you know, his two starts before the All-Star break weren't that great. He is still getting all these strikeout totals.
Now, whoa.
He's getting hit a little
is
hard.
One was against the Rockies, who hit left-handed pitching very, very well. Okay. So you can't. Look, when you talk about some of these ballparks, And this is something that we haven't hit on a lot, but when we talk about some of these ballparks like Cincinnati, like Chase, like Coors, I mean, he still didn't do bad. Yeah, he allowed 4 earned runs, but I mean, he still threw 6 innings, had 9 strikeouts. I mean,
what about the two starts against the Phillies?
What about the start against the Dodgers?
That was amazing. That was amazing. But we know that there's Dodgers strikeouts.
Death taxes and Robbie Ray against the Dodgers, by the way. Just throwing it out there.
Yeah. We know the Dodgers strike out of time, but that's fine. But again, we're trying to dissect here, you know, try not to go with Kershaw. But again, look, I think Ray is fine, you know, but again, for 10 you know, 10 and change, whatever he is on FanDuel. I mean, he just hasn't really been, you know, consistently that guy that was been getting into the 60s that we saw in, you know, what, May, early June, whatever it was.
So he calmed down a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. He hasn't pitched since the 6th of July.
Yes.
That is 12 days.
Yep.
I mean, I he might be a little rusty in the first couple innings, but as long as he doesn't get tagged in the first couple innings, which is definitely a possibility, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But as long as he doesn't get tagged in the first couple innings, I mean, the strikeouts are there.
Yeah, I think they're fine. Cincinnati is like dead on average across the board in like every offensive category against left-handed pitching. So
except here's the problem. Over the last 30 days, they've only got a 299 WOBA. They only have a 146 ISO, and they're still striking out 23% of the time or 22.5% of the time. Now, that's if we compare apples to apples, okay, and we're just comparing these two, Robbie Ray and Clayton
Kershaw. I love apples.
Oh, I know. They're awesome. KD loves bananas. So, the White Sox over the last 30 days actually have not been hitting left-handed pitching very well, and we can take that into consideration because they only have a 295 wOBA with a 158 ISO, but they're striking out 30% of the time. Team that is striking out more, the only pitcher that technically has a better matchup than Clayton Kershaw tonight. Can you name him?
I'm sorry. Run those numbers again of who I'm trying to pick.
295 WOBA.
Okay.
This is for Clayton Kershaw against the White Sox. 158 ISO, 29.39 strikeout percentage against left-handed pitching.
Okay.
There is one guy.
Oakland. Yes. So Snell against Oakland.
Yes. 210 or 210 WOBA, 38.038 ISO. 30% strikeout percentage.
Yeah, no, I did see this play. Now, this is a game that I haven't gone. I was up incredibly late last night. I still didn't get to like five games in the game-by-game breakdown. This was one of them. But, I mean, look, Snell's had his issues, but I do know the issues that the A's have had against left-handed pitching, which is insane if you think about it because, I mean, you know, you look at all the bats that they have there. Chris Davis, not that great. The big righty that he's got to worry about today is Ryan Healy, who I always like. So, it's interesting how some of these teams suck against left-handed pitching. And then, you know, the Blue Jays, too, who don't exactly have the greatest numbers. They got out to a pretty good start against Erod last night. And then, you know, we saw Erod taking the strikeouts to him midway through that game. But the Blue Jays face another left-handed pitcher today, Brian Johnson, who is on that Boston Pawtucket shuttle. Again, we were talking about being average across the board with left-handers against Cincinnati. Well, the Blue Jays are right there when you look at their WOBA, ISO, weighted runs created plus. They're all right around that, you know, 15th in the league sort of mark. So Brian Johnson could be an interesting SP2 today. Probably not, you know, not exactly where I want to go, but, you know, the numbers are there to back him up at least.
Yeah, but the only thing I'm worried about with Brian Johnson is the strikeouts. Can he get enough if he gets tagged for three or four runs, you know? And is he going to be able to get enough? You know, he's got – his swinging strike percentage is only 8.2. He only strikes out about 18.5% of batters that he faces. Now, his walk rate is down. His whip is about league average or about average on tonight's slate. You know, and it's – it's very, very it's a very middle of the road play. As SP2, I don't mind it. I'm just really kind of concerned about the strikeouts. Right now I have him in my FanDuel lineup with a Detroit and Colorado stack. But it's obviously very fluid. And that's only if James McCann decide, or if Brad Ausmus decides he wants to actually put James McCann in the lineup today instead of Alex Avila, who can't seem to hit the broads out of a barn if he fell out of a freaking hay bin.
Yeah, you tell him. You tell him. Back to Snell real quick. I think this is an interesting play. I mean, you know, in terms of projections and whatnot, he is projected to do very well today. But, you know, in looking at Snell, you take a look at it this season, he's only officially recorded 6 innings once, and that was his first start of the season. You know, walks have always been a big thing with Snell, 9 over his last 10 innings of work, which kind of, you know, makes you scratch your head. But at Wrigley Field in his last start, pretty good. 5 innings of shutout ball, had 5 strikeouts. So.
Yeah, I'm not playing Snell to get depth out of him. I'm playing him to, well, 1, for salary relief, and right. 2, because, you know, he's got such a good matchup, and he's got potential. You know, he's got the ability to go 6 innings, get, you know, 7-8 strikeouts, and really, really, really put the screws to a lot of people. So it could be a very, very advantageous thing to get Snell in the lineup,
mm-hmm.
And be able to stack bats around him so you can get that offense. Now, all of this is fine and dandy, but it only works if, you know, we have good stacks and good bats around, you know, we can get a 60 out of, you know, a $4,000 pitcher. That doesn't matter if we don't have the bats to do it. So
indeed. Hey, I want to ask you something too. And, you know, I know you're a catcher. I don't know how many all-star breaks you've dealt with over your baseball life, but you know, just in terms of having all those days off away from the team, away from the coaching staff and whatnot, how do you, like, you know, how do you pin that on a pitcher, I guess, for, you know, since we're talking about them, you know, looking at some of these guys at their first start coming out of the All-Star break, I mean, is there anything that you look for, anything that you know about pitchers during an extended break like this that could help us for DFS purposes?
A lot of it has to do with release point. Pitchers are very, very, very routine driven. That's why when you see starters go to the bullpen, it kind of takes them a couple appearances in order to kind of get into a flow and the swing of things. And, mm-hmm. you know, vice versa, when starters come out of the pen and they go to the starting rotation. I think as long as they have the ability to kind of keep with the same routine, whether that's getting into it, you know, this is game 5. Okay. So, the guys that are going today, basically you could say, okay, game 1 that they came back last Friday, they started their, you know, 5-day routine. So they would treat that the day, like the day after they pitched, you know, and then they would go through their normal 5-day routine. So by this point, I don't think it should really be that big of a deal. They probably went a little bit harder in their bullpen session to try to get a little bit of that tired arm feeling going again. Maybe not push it to the extreme, but maybe push it a little bit harder than they normally do. And now they should be good to go. So I don't have – at this point, I don't have any hesitation about anybody. It was, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday starters that I started to have a little bit of hesitation about. So, because a lot of these teams probably reported on Thursday to wherever their teams were. And they probably threw a heavy, heavy, heavy bullpen session, like almost like a simulated game. You know, they probably went, you know, I would say 80 pitches in a bullpen session. If they, you know, depending on if they were nursing injuries or anything like that, and, you know, kind of go from there. So, I mean, the long answer is what I just gave. The short answer is by this point, I don't have any problems with it. As long as they weren't nursing an injury, and we know that a lot of times we don't know that, but as long as they weren't nursing an injury, then we should be good to go.
All right, cool. All right, so before we get into stacks and bats and whatnot, any other pitchers that we haven't mentioned that you wanted to bring up?
Edwin Jackson.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if anybody – he's going to be under 2% owned, maybe even lower. Edwin Jackson is getting the start today. and he is the lowest graded pitcher on the DFSA starting hub. And there's a reason. It's because he allowed 4 runs in 5 innings with the Baltimore Orioles. However, he has pitched very, very, very well for the Nationals AAA team. That is the reason why he is getting the call up right now. Joe Ross, obviously.
I thought he had dirty laundry on somebody, but that's a good reason too.
Yeah, Joe Ross, obviously, going to the DL. Tommy John surgery.
Oh, he gone.
So we will see him maybe in 2018.
Yep.
The end of 2018, maybe.
Also, Michael Pineda, too.
Yeah, well, we talked about Pineda, what was it, Friday? Well, Pineda happened on Friday, but, you know, yeah, I'm interested. And here's the reason why. Yes, the Angels have Mike Trout, Cole Calhoun, Cameron Maybin, Albert Pujols. But who else in that Angels lineup scares you? Really, honestly?
Mascot, Tony Danza.
I mean,
Danny Glover.
Mike Trout hasn't shown any power since he came back. I'm not scared by this lineup.
No,
I'm really not.
You,
they have a collective 306 WOBA. The projected starting lineup has a collective 306 WOBA with a 157 ISO versus right-handed pitching in the last 30 days. I mean, are you kidding me? Yes, please. The ballpark is a very, very good ballpark. It's going to be night. He's almost a guaranteed lock for the win with the Nationals going up against Jesse Chavez. I think Vegas, and yes, I know Chavez is a 136 favorite. I think Vegas has this completely backwards.
There are, I'm just looking at a couple of the BVP numbers here. Collectively, Angels hitting 350, well, current members of the Angels hitting 315 against him. Angelton Simmons, the only one to homer, but you got a couple decent ones. I mean, nothing, you know, really that's, you know, that makes you go, oh, I don't know about this. Trout has actually never faced him, which is pretty interesting. But I don't know, everybody's kind of in that mid-200s, you know, couple of 400 guys. Martin Maldonado, 4-for-10 with a double against him. So, you know, Luis Valbuena, 6-for-18. Angelton Simmons, 4-for-11. You know, they've seen, again, it's a different Edwin Jackson, so.
Yeah.
Something to take into account.
And this is a strictly large field GPP play to save some money. You compare him with Kershaw on DK, who's 14K, to kind of offset the cost of that. And then you could, you know, go grab a couple bats and build a better overall roster. You don't need him to do much. You just need him to pitch 5-6 innings, get a couple Ks, and not blow up. And I think that Mike Trout's going to be one of the highest owned players on the slate. Now, Mike Trout could get him. I'm not saying that. Mike Trout, if you want to go talent for talent, Mike Trout over Edwin Jackson by far every single day of the week. But with that said, you know, if Trout goes double dong, that's fine. But if that's all Edwin Jackson allows, or if Edwin Jackson somehow manages to ink out a quality start, then, you know, you're ahead of the game, even if Trout does double dong. Plus, he's got, in retrospect, the best offense in the National League going against Jesse Chavez, who, let's face it, has not lived up to the hype that he came into the majors with.
Was there Jesse Chavez hype? I must have missed it.
Yeah, he was one of the A's top prospects about 3 or 4 years ago. You know, top pitching prospect. But, you know, you give me Bryce Harper, Ryan Zimmerman, Daniel Murphy, Anthony Rendon against Jesse Chavez, I'll take that every day of the week. And maybe you don't play Edwin Jackson, but maybe you fade the Angels because of it. And we'll talk, and there's another situation that's kind of like this too, that we'll talk about that I think is actually kind of a trap.
Okay. There was a couple guys that I had, you know, interest in, I guess, for the people that do the SP2 sites out there, but J-Hap has phenomenal BVP numbers against the Boston Red Sox. A lot of these guys have struggled against him. Pulling him up right now, we got Pedroia at 6 for 29, 5 strikeouts. Hanley Ramirez, 5 for 22, 4 strikeouts. Mookie Betts, 3 for 17. Xander Bogaerts, 1 for 16. So those are all very interesting numbers. I mean, you know, I haven't seen Happ really projected out that well today, but you got to think, too, Happ's actually – he had a couple starts there before the All-Star break where he looked very good, 5 straight quality starts before that last one. But keep in mind, that last one he ran into the Astros, the number one team against left-handed pitching this season. So, you know, you put that in the back of your mind. That's actually an interesting way to go there. And then pretty interested in the Sal Romano kid. But, again, this is along the lines of your Edwin Jackson sort of play in terms of saving money. This guy Romano – fastball tops out at, you know, around 96, 97, which is pretty interesting. And then I know the ballpark sucks for him to be in, but again, we all know that the Diamondbacks do struggle on the road. So it's a little bit of a calculated risk, but I'm interested. And he did pick up his first major league win at Coors Field in his last start. So I'm always impressed when that happens for a young guy.
Yeah, I like Sal Romano. I don't think tonight's the night to play him. Like you said, he's got an electric arm. He's one of their top pitching prospects.
And his family is connected. Hey, Sal Romano from Syosset, Long Island.
I have no idea what that means. But anyways.
East Coast mob type shit. But yeah. With the last name like Romano, yeah, the kid's family's definitely connected, without a doubt. I hope I don't get whacked for
saying that. How
about
the pitching matchup? Ray Romano?
That's good. That's good. Well played.
So,
I was trying to think. The only Romano I knew was Corky, but now that you mention it, yeah, that was Ray Romano. That's right.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, I like the kid. I like his arm and everything. I don't think that tonight's the night to play him. A lot of it has to do with the ballpark.
Sure.
To be honest, I mean. This is a Diamondbacks team that, yeah, they're struggling. They're struggling on the road this season. They're going to be playing a lot of games in the second half on the road. So I hope everybody liked playing the Diamondbacks in the first half because we're not going to get to play them as much this unless they start running hot.
Boo.
So that is kind of an interesting little tidbit. Just like the Rockies played a lot of road games in the first half, and they're about to get a heavy dose of Coors Field. So,
I'm sorry. One last note there on Romano. He did get clipped off at 82 and 84 pitches in his first two starts of the season. So,
yeah, they're going to be careful with him.
I think
the cap is 90 pitches, so he needs to. He's got a 21% strikeout rate. So he needs to be able to produce those strikeouts in order for him to actually be of value for you today. But I don't mind it. I just, for me personally, probably not going to go there tonight for that. I'm interested in Woody. For those of you that don't know my Cheers references, it's J.A. Happ.
Or lifestyle.
Or lifestyle, yeah. I'm interested in Von Nova. I know he's going to get against Milwaukee, but in that ballpark, I like that, and the strikeouts should be there. Brad Peacock is scary but interesting. He's pitched very, very well. If he cannot walk people tonight, that would be swell. And then, like I said, you know, Michael Wacha going against the Mets is interesting as well. And if he could pitch 7 innings, that would be swell as well.
Indeed. You mentioned Tyson Ross real quick at the beginning of the program, but just wanted to bring up the fact he has been pretty good over his last three starts. Has the ERA below 2 there. 1-0 with a with a 3.24 ERA. The whip, that's what was low, 1.14 in those last three starts. Interesting note, too, he hasn't faced the Orioles since 2012, so not a lot of history there with guys against him. And, you know, I like that when we're looking at pitchers, just the element of unfamiliarity is usually sometimes a very underrated factor.
Yeah, and I think besides, you know, a couple guys, you know, in that lineup, I think that this is a place that we can attack a little bit. Obviously, we know that the Baltimore Orioles are not a good quality offensive team currently, and their numbers kind of show it. He's down towards the bottom of it, but his numbers, his peripheral numbers, look really good. Other than the ERA and the Sierra, so. But I think a lot of that had to do with this. He had a great start, his first start, and then he got blown up for two starts, I think it was. I'm looking here. Yeah, he got blown up the second start, and then the start against the Chicago White Sox. Interesting enough, those are both against teams that hit right-handed pitching kind of bad. So,
yeah, I was reading up a little bit on Ross too, and you know, the other manager talking about him a little bit, and you know, they feel all the times that he hasn't done well this season. It's really been one inning that has held him back from, you know, his numbers looking very gaudy. But you know, they feel like, you know, without the one inning, in I think he's what, made five starts already. Yeah. So I think you know, in two of those, he just had one really bad inning, but the last three starts have looked pretty good for him. So. You know, I liked Ross a lot when he was with San Diego, so interesting.
Oh, yeah, this is a guy that when he was with San Diego, we played him a lot. It is one of those things that you can just – you could pretty much, depending on who the matchup was and what ballpark he was in, you could kind of just lock him in every fifth day as a good value option, mid-range option. And he had the ability to go out and get you, you know, 8 to 12 strikeouts a game. I don't think he's that pitcher anymore. He's still working his way back. He's not going to pitch deep in the ball games. They're going to take it easy with this guy because he missed so much time with the shoulder issues. You know, if you get a good quality start out of him, then you're going to be happy. And three out of his five starts have been, you know, close to quality starts, if not quality starts. So I think there was one game where he allowed like one run, but threw a bunch of pitches and only pitched five innings, but still very, very, very good. Peripheral numbers, except for, like you said, those one or two innings.
Whoa. You know, and this has nothing to do – well, it kind of does have a little bit, but I just pulled up the – I was about to click off the player profile for Edwin Jackson. Did you know that he was born in West Germany?
I did not.
That is interesting.
I think I've heard it before, but I didn't remember just off
the top. Schlug into the Nationals this evening.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Well, I'll talk about this guy later.
All right, let's get into some stacks today. And I wanted to start off because I know that you mentioned Ivan Nova, but I was incredibly shocked when I found out about this. But the Milwaukee Brewers' BVP numbers here against Nova are pretty damn good. Now, a couple of them are only for the short term, but the one that really stands out, we'll get to it more when we get to third baseman. But Travis Shaw, 7 of 10, two doubles, two homers against Ivan Nova. The one thing I will say, though, I mean, again, this is a pure GPP, you know, max entry type of play, but Nova is 6-2 with a 2.63 ERA at PNC Park this season, has only allowed three home runs in 51 and a third innings there at PNC Park as well. So that all that bodes well for Nova, but it's interesting that, you know, some of these guys have good numbers. Travis Shaw, Eric Sogard, Eric Thames, Jonathan Villar all have good short-term BVP numbers against Nova. And Nova just faced these Brewers a couple weeks ago. He gave up 11 hits over seven innings. So,
that was Milwaukee.
Yep. So, I mean, again, Max Entry sort of stack type of play there. But again, probably not a place that I'm going.
Yeah, if this, I would agree with you. If this game was in Milwaukee, I would probably go there. In fact, I think we did, if I'm not mistaken. But with him obviously being so comfortable in PNC and this ballpark, you know, Travis Shaw, yeah, he can hit it into Allegheny. I'm not saying that at all. but, you know,
one of the servers.
Yeah, no kidding. But, you know, it's just kind of one of those things, like, he doesn't walk a lot of people. He doesn't, you know, get himself into trouble. He's not going to strike out a bunch of people, but he's going to pitch deep into the ball game. And I think the strikeouts, he doesn't get a lot of strikeouts. He's not a strikeout type of pitcher. He's got the capability to, you know, but if he gets you 6-5, then, and he gets into the 40s. Okay, so if he gives you the start that he gave you against the Cubs on June 17th, innings, 6 hits, 2 walks, 6 strikeouts, 3 runs, a quality start, and a win, that's 40 FanDuel points. Mm-hmm. I'll take that.
Yeah.
So.
Sounds good to me. Hey, speaking of that Brewers-Pirates game, guess who's set to make their return from suspension tonight?
Starling Marte.
Indeed. Indeed.
Yep.
Interested to see what that looks like.
I don't think anybody's going to play him.
Yeah.
So, I kind of liked the Pirates stack last night. That was one of my – it didn't quite work out. There were some good plays.
Polanco, though.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. There were some good plays within the stacks. But, you know, it wasn't great.
But hey, I wanted to say too, I mean, I don't mind going back to that Pirate stack tonight as well, because, you know, if we're talking about sneaky stacks here, you know, Guerra with only 2 pitches going up against a Pirates team that, what, second lowest strikeout rate against right-handed pitching. I think both of those two stats kind of add up well.
Yeah, and Starling Marte is gonna come out with his hair on fire. He's got a lot to prove. Obviously, he hurt a lot of people. He, you know, let a lot of people down and stuff like that. I think him and Polanco and McCutcheon are nice little stack tonight. I don't mind stacking against Junior Guerrero.
They better
tonight.
Find a spot for my boy Adam Frazier. Second base. Yeah. Oh, God, then Harrison. What are you going to do? Maybe shortstop? I don't know, man. That Pirates, you know, jeez, that's crazy. They got a lot of players on that roster.
They do.
Lord. All right. What other stacks are we looking at here?
Detroit,
once again, they work so well. So nice. Do it twice.
Yeah. Now, I will say this. Be careful. J.D. Martinez supposedly, in air quotes, was pulled yesterday due to back tightness. If you know us on this pod, you know that we don't mess with the back. But he's also been linked to about 6 teams in trade rumors. So there have been a lot of discussions. If Carlos Gonzalez is not in the Rockies lineup tonight, I'm not putting J.D. Martinez in my Detroit stacks. The reason I say that is because that pretty much gives you that. That's kind of been the deal that's been discussed. They want to get a right-handed power bat in the Rockies outfield, because they don't have one right now. If you notice, all of our quote-unquote outfielders, except for when we put Pat Valeka out there, are left-handed. Even the one coming back, David Dahl, eventually, he's left-handed. So they want to get a right-handed power bat in that outfield, and J.D. Martinez has been that name that's been thrown around a lot. So, make no mistake about it. Detroit wants to unload him and get some prospects. And there are a couple teams that have the ability to grab those prospects as well.
All right. One that's pretty interesting to me tonight, St. Louis Cardinals up against the Mets. I got the, I'll say, privilege, since I'm a Phillies fan, of seeing Rafael Montero throw against Philly, what was it, 2 weeks ago. So here's the interesting part. If he had enough innings to qualify for the stat, his 5.5 walks per 9 innings would by far be the most in the majors. He still leads the major, but it's, you know, officially he doesn't, because he doesn't have enough innings to do so.
Who's this?
Rafael Montero.
Oh, okay.
For the Mets. So both sides of the plate, too, are hitting 300 against him. Both sides of the plate have an OBP over 400 against him. So, you know, we saw the Cardinals get busy, you know, from the middle innings on in that game last night. But, again, stay hot with those sticks. I dig it, man. Matt Carpenter at the, you know, the top of that lineup there, too. 20 straight games on base for him. So he's setting the table. Things looking good for the Cards.
Yep. Absolutely.
I dig it. And again, a guy like Montero, I think we both talk about this enough, but you put enough guys on base, somebody's going to knock him in at some point.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a underlying stat that people don't take a lot of look at. It's actually WHIP. And I mean, other than Edwin Jackson, who, you know, we've already talked about, Montero has the highest WHIP on tonight's slate, followed by, you know, Travis Wood. And these were the top two stacks that we just talked about, guys. The third one would be Bartolo Colon, and we'll talk about him here in a minute, because I'm sure that you have a nice chalk stack for us to talk about. But, you know, Rafael Montero and Travis Wood, these are two guys that now the difference between the two is Montero has the capability to strike out guys, and the Cardinals are not the team that they used to be. They strike out a lot. They strike out about 23% of the time versus right-handed pitching this season. But, you know, he's a strikeout ground ball pitcher, but he allows a lot of fly balls. He's a very, very, very interesting, like, his peripherals don't add up. Like, he's a backwards pitcher, I would almost say. He walks a lot of guys, but he also strikes out a lot of guys. The problem is he also, you know, gets a lot of fly balls and ground balls. You know, but he doesn't allow a lot of hard contact. It's a lot of medium contact because he doesn't have a high soft contact percentage either. So there's a lot of, obviously it's only 39 innings. That's a very small sample size, but there's a lot of contradicting statistics that are very, very, very interesting as to watch as we go forward.
All right. Let's talk. You just brought up Bartolo Colon, and he'll be making his first start for the Minnesota Twins tonight. Luis Sessa goes for the Yankees on the other side of things. I think, yeah, a lot. I know a lot of people are going to go ahead and try to stack with, you know, Yankees bats against Bartolo Colon. Keep in mind, Aaron Judge already feeling that funk from the home run derby.
Oh, my God.
1-for-21 since the All-Star break. Batting average has dropped all the way down to .311.
Oh, my God.
But keep in mind, I kind of like the twin side of things in this one because, number one, this isn't exactly scientific, but how many times have we seen the chalk stack of the day not go off and the team in the other dugout be the one to go off for a million runs? Well, we got some numbers behind this to go here. And the interesting thing is we know the Twins have a lot of these right-handed bats that could do some damage, mainly Brian Dozier, Miguel Sano. Tonight's Yankee star Luis Sessa is just getting beat over the head by right-handers this season, being a right-hander himself. But, you know, he's giving up an OBP of 400, the slugging percentage that's 569, a 969 OPS. Now, keep in mind, these are limited number of at-bats, but still, I think, enough to make me say, hey, we got something going on here. And again, I think perfect tournament play to go with the Twins instead of the Yankees in this one tonight.
Yeah, I'm not playing Yankees. I don't think that there is a quote-unquote home run derby slump for Aaron Judge, because if you look at it, you have a lot of, you know, bad luck. He got robbed of a home run by Jackie Bradley Jr. He's hit a lot of hard balls right at guys.
Goes down the scorebook as a fly ball.
Yeah, it does. But unfortunately, so you have to sit there and look at it. It's whatever. It's baseball. This isn't I'm a very superstitious guy. I'm a baseball guy. So, when we talk about like the Madden curse, I think that's legit, you know, because it's been proven over the last 25 years. you know, or whatever. But
you know why I think that is? Because so many guys in the league play Madden. They keep seeing that guy's face over and over that they just want to pulverize him when they get to him.
I just think that here's the thing. With Madden, I think they take like a guy that just had a – you know, in order to qualify for the Madden cover, you have to have a phenomenal year.
Right.
Well, there's just very, very – there's a very small percentage – chance that you're actually going to duplicate that year that you had in order to get on the cover of Madden. So that's what that is.
Well, this year they tried to say, all right, we're putting Brady now. If Brady goes down, we know that it's legit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
If he doesn't win a Super Bowl, we know that the curse is legit because that's just.
No, because it's very hard to hit.
That's his level.
It's very hard to win back to back Super Bowls. That has nothing to do with it.
He's done it before.
I know he's done it before. He's done it multiple times. That's not the point. The issue is with when it comes to Aaron Judge, it's very, 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 very bad luck because he's hit the ball hard and it's just an ebb and flow of baseball. Guys go on streaks where they, you know, they hit 500 over the course of 2 weeks, and then they go on streaks where they, you know, hit a buck 82. And that's why we play 162 games. About 2 weeks, we're going to see the return of Aaron Judge just murdering baseballs all over the yard.
Well, it's interesting, too, because, you know, watching the Yankees telecast last night, they bring up the fact of, you know, how Judge has just been chasing a lot of balls outside the zone. And again, you know, that was one of the reasons why he did so well early on this season, just because he had such a great eye. He wasn't swinging at that doo-doo in the dirt. But again, I think that you're right. That's just something that, you know, it's like a two-week sort of thing where, all right, he'll be in a funk for a little bit. But should know if you are going to go with Yankees today, go with the right-handers because Colon's just getting crushed by him this season. Righties hitting .365 against him this season with an OPS just over that 1.0 mark there. So I think all those should work out pretty well.
Yeah, I'm not going with Colon, but I'm not stacking Yankees either.
Oh, I'm glad you're not going with Colon. Why don't you go with Colon in that head-to-head that we're playing?
Because I'm afraid of a negative.
Oh, goodness. All right, let's see. I like the Dodgers today against Miguel Gonzalez, an extreme flyball pitcher.
Of course you do.
Miguel Gonzalez got absolutely rocked in his rehab starts coming into this one. Tonight's going to be Gonzalez's first start in the majors since, I believe it's June 14th, something around those lines. It's been a while, over a month. So, you know, it'll take some time. Yeah, June 14th. It'll take some chance for him to get back to it. And again, we mentioned this when we talked about Kershaw at the beginning. That Dodgers money line is up to -330 currently here at 1 o'clock Eastern. So, you know, again, I think a lot of that has to do with the bats, Bellinger, freaking Seager, Turner, Grandal, all these guys are in play tonight.
I mean, I can't argue with those. You're talking about three guys that are just absolutely crushing baseballs right now. So I don't have any problems going with that at all.
Cool. Who are some stacks you're thinking about?
You mean outside of the Colorado Rockies?
Indeed.
Did I already talk about Detroit?
Yes, you did.
Okay. I mean, excuse me. Sorry. The Nationals are interesting. Going up against Jesse Chavez. Houston obviously going up against Sam Gaviglio. I actually like your boys tonight, Philly.
Oh yeah.
Top three in that, or the, you know, three of the top four in that lineup have been hitting the ball pretty well lately. Galvis, Franco, and Tommy Joseph are actually hitting the ball like they, like everybody thought they would at the beginning of the season.
Sure.
You could probably add in there. He's not hitting for power, but you could probably add in there Odubel Herrera.
Glad you mentioned the no power. A lot of these BVP numbers against Conley. Now, Conley's actually got pretty good numbers against the Phillies, but hell, Kohler did, and we saw what happened last night. But all the BVP numbers are great against Conley. Unfortunately, they're all singles. So you know, we'll see what happens tonight. But again, the Phillies do have a lot of lefties, so I'm interested to see. Like, you're probably going to get Cameron Rupp. Well, you definitely get Cameron Rupp behind the plate. I'm interested to see. Oh boy, I guess because no Aaron Altair, no Kendrick's still on the DL, so he might Kenny get a couple. Perkins. Yeah. I look, when that guy first Daniel came up from the majors, he was just hitting every single ball right at the fielders, and he just looks terrible nowadays. So sorry, Ken. And how about my Phillies trying to make that move for Christian Yelich?
Well, yeah, but how about your Phillies blowing up Kohler last night like I said they were going to?
Yeah, but again, they threw out six lefties last night. Did not see that happen.
I don't care. You tell me Tom Kohler was going to be highly owned because everybody was talking about him, which he wasn't that highly owned. But
right.
It didn't matter. The Phillies were low owned anyways. I'm going to stack against the chalk pitcher of the night as long as they're not guys like Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah, well, I don't care. I stand by the pick. I like Kohler's stuff, and if the son of a bitch could learn to finish off two strike counts, we'd be going somewhere. But hey, if my aunt had balls, she'd be my uncle. So
there you go.
Indeed. One last chalky, or I'm sorry, very unchalky stack tonight. I'm a little interested in the Mets. Now, I know we talked about Waka, him being very good here over these last couple starts, but if you look at his road numbers this season, they are not good at all. He does have a 7.20 ERA, I believe, away from Busch Stadium this season. So if you believe in all those splits, this could be an interesting way to go here with the Mets. But don't go with Jay Bruce because he's one of 24 with 11 strikeouts against Waka. Disgusting. I know.
And now Jay Bruce will hit a bomb.
Yes, of course. He's got to go 2 for 25. But yeah, I think that's all we got for stacks tonight.
Yep.
Sure. All right. Position by position, my favorite part of the show. All right. What are we doing behind the dish tonight?
Brad Ausmus. This is a note to you. DFS players want.
He James retired. McCann, you can't play Brad. You can't play Brad Ausmus. He retired, Keith.
I know, but this is a note to you. DFS players want James McCann in the lineup.
They do.
He is my top catcher of the night.
Yes, you know, we brought up all the stats yesterday. Hopefully you listened to the pod yesterday, but yeah, his numbers against left-handed pitching are fantastic.
He didn't play last night, so they're still the same.
Yeah, yes, very true. But remember, I told you know, Avila's numbers against Vargas were pretty good, so I guess he wanted it.
Yeah, but Vargas can't hit the broadside of a barn right now.
Avila.
Or yeah, Avila, sorry.
Well Vargas couldn't last night. So.
Let's say Vargas couldn't hit the broadside of a barn either.
Yep.
Actually, he hit a lot. He did the thing that is very, very hard to do. Okay, and if you think about this, it kind of really is very hard to do. He hit a lot of bats square with the baseball.
Oh?
Yeah. I mean, come on. Matuk, Castellanos, Kinsler, they all popped him pretty hard. So when you take a round ball versus a round bat that's a circumference of like 9 inches – it is very hard to squarely hit that many bats that hard in such a short period of time. And he seemed to accomplish that. So congrats to him.
Caveman hit ball far.
Yes.
Wilson Contreras against a lefty. Always a good idea, in my opinion. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but they are quite good.
402, 269, last 30 days.
All right. Let's see.
Yasmani Grandal.
Yasmani Grandal. Yes, mentioned him with the Dodgers stack. Love him. Love him. Just real quick, Sal Perez against the lefty and Matt Boyd. That should be a good one. And then Gary Sanchez brought up the numbers about Bartolo to right-handers. Well, here we go.
Yes. Manny Pinas should be in the lineup tonight. He's always done well. Now, it's not great numbers versus right-handed pitching. He hits left-handed pitching a lot better, but Stephen Vogt got absolutely plowed on accident, mind you, by Chad Kuhl. It's like he bent back and then bent forward and then rolled around and I don't know how that happened. That's what you get when you have an unathletic pitcher trying to make an athletic slide. It just doesn't work. People get injured.
I hate laughing because he got that NFL like hit over the middle with his his neck sticking out. But oh, that was so bad.
Yeah, he got hit in the shoulder and did like a somersault. And it sucked because when Austin Hedges was scratched, I had Hedges in two lineups, and I put Posey in one and Vogt in the other, and lo and behold, third inning, Vogt gets knocked. Thanks. Yeah. At least you got a walk before that.
You did.
Not that we were ever making fun of people with injuries, but still.
Wow.
I think Christian Vasquez is a little bit interesting against left-handed pitching over the last 30 days. 394 wOBA, 375 ISO.
I believe he was one of the only Red Sox to have good BVP numbers against Hap.
Yeah, absolutely. You're going to get him at a very, very, very low. So if James McCann's not in that lineup, I think for around the same price, you can go to Christian Vasquez. And that's obviously if you're not going with a guy like Contreras or Yasmani Grandal or Perez.
I don't know how we could forget Hector Sanchez, third game in a row with the homer last night. Should be back in the lineup tonight. Hedges got scratched late last night. Not exactly. Did you see what was wrong or hear what was wrong?
He took a foul ball off of the mask about 4 days ago, three or four days ago. And even though he passed concussion protocols, the reason why he was in the lineup last night is he was good to go. He said he was 100%, but the harder and harder he worked out, of course, with the high altitude, I can see this.
Yes.
The worse and worse he felt. So he told the Padres he couldn't go last night. Now, Hector Sanchez is interesting.
All or nothing type of play.
Yeah. Antonio Senzatella is not a guy, and we've talked about this before. Senzatella is not a guy I like to pick on because he's very efficient. And now he's coming back from the minor leagues. He was in the bullpen for a little while. They're trying to manage his innings and everything, which I think is going to help. Because the last three starts before he went to the bullpen were really actually kind of rough against Arizona, San Francisco, and Chicago. But before that, I mean, I don't know. He's a guy that I don't really kind of want to pick on. That could end up blowing up in my face, but I'm trying to see if he's faced the Padres this year. He faced the Padres in his second start, and went five innings, allowed two runs, and got five strikeouts, got the quality start and the win, and then a couple starts later, six innings, two strikeouts, two runs. So he's had pretty good success against these Padres. One of those starts was at Coors. The other one was in Petco. So can you guess which one was his better start and what stadium it was in?
Well, of course, since the question seems simple, it has to be the other answer. So it has to be the Coors Field one.
Coors Field start was the best. You are correct.
Can't get nothing by me, man.
I think a lot of people are going to game log watch and go straight towards the Padres stack. Now, where I think it could pay off, because the bullpen has been absolutely just atrocious lately. It is not, they're very worn down. And a lot of that has to do with the two inning start that Gray had in New York. And then the, five batter start that Tyler Chatwood had. So they are worn down. We saw it last night. You know, Rockies had a 9-3 lead and then all of a sudden, or 9-2 lead. And then all of a sudden, you know, Germán Márquez comes out, who pitched great last night, by the way. Germán Márquez comes out, and they go and allow four runs in an inning and a third before Greg Holland had to come in and shut that down. So,
True. Let's see here. Yeah, I got nothing left for catcher, but I got you ready to move on to first base?
Please.
Fair enough. Who you like there?
Hanley Ramirez.
Okay. Do you explain?
617 wOBA, 611 ISO over the last 30 days versus left-handed pitching. He looks healthy again. I don't know what it was, what clicked, who said what, or if his mom just decided to start nurturing him with a bottle again. Whoa. But he freaking has been murdering the baseball lately. They moved him back up to that cleanup spot, and he has not missed a beat. He homered the last time I played him. I think it was Sunday or no, it was Saturday. He hit a home run. I really do kind of like Hanley Ramirez tonight, and he's cheap. He's only $3,200 on FanDuel.
Yeah, the Red Sox do that a lot with their first baseman, where, you know, or well, not the Red Sox do it a lot, but
sorry, it's FanDuel Friday. He hit the home run.
Yeah, FanDuel does that a lot, where, you know, they don't put Hanley Ramirez or Mitch Moreland up there in price. So yeah, they're always a fantastic option. I don't mind that one at all. Boy, oh boy, the first base is always a good spot to go. I mean, we can go in a number of different directions here. Cody Bellinger probably going to be my top guy, though.
Well, yeah, but that's chalk. That's like everybody's like, duh, Cody Bellinger.
Well, we didn't specify. I'm going with what I'm going with here. But I like that. I wouldn't even mind going with Pujols against your boy Ejax.
He's not my boy. I'm just saying that because of the price and because it's the Angels in Angel Stadium, I have interest in large field GPPs.
I feel you. Cost efficient wise, I'm trying to think here. Matt Adams going up against John Lackey. Lackey has allowed 24 homers this season. That's second most in the bigs. So that's not a bad one.
You want a sneaky one off?
I do, Keith.
Jose Abreu,
he does. He has homered against Kershaw before.
440 WOBA, 333 and he's a single. He's a one off. He's a single, and it's just because he's only $2,600 on FanDuel.
Interesting.
So if you want a double whammy in a large field GPP, fade Kershaw, play Abreu, and go build a couple stacks.
I like. Well, I don't like because it's against Kershaw, but I like the mindset. Damn it, I had a first baseman.
Jimmy Choi against Cologne. He's $2,500. 466 WOBA, 538 ISO against right-handed pitching over the last 30 days. He is a guy that I actually have played him a lot, and I like him. We've talked about this strategy a while. If you can tell me that I can save money and get power at the first base position instead of paying up for a premium in tournaments, I don't mind doing that because of the fact that you've got so much power at that position because it's a power position. That's why I like a guy like Abreu tonight, because of the fact that now I'm getting elite power and an elite hitter, or a very, very good hitter, maybe not elite. But he's got elite power for, you know, $2,600, and a guy that has, you know, has homered off of Kershaw. Yep. So I like that. It's not optimal, obviously, but it is something that if you're not thinking about how to attack a guy and get low ownership on a guy that can, you know, hit a home run and then possibly after Kershaw's out of the game, hit another home run, then you're probably not playing GPPs the right way. I'm not saying that you have to play him, but you at least should be thinking about it. So
fair enough. You want to try to catch lightning in a bottle. Chris Davis, 2,900 on FanDuel. You know, one swing could pay off dividends for that. So don't mind that one. And then I do like both first basemen from the Blue Jays tonight going up against the lefty. Justin Smoke, we all know, hitting damn near right around 400 against left-handed pitching this season. The first time Johnson started against Brian Johnson, who's going for the Red Sox tonight. He started against the Blue Jays in his first start this season. Justin Smoke ended up homering off him in that game. So I don't mind him or Kendrys Morales, who had a big two-run double last night.
Yep.
All right, let's take it over to second base. I mentioned Matt Carpenter, 20 straight games on base. He's been one of the, you know, hotter hitters in the league since the All-Star break, so I could certainly get down with him.
Ian Kinsler.
Okay.
348 ISO versus left-handed pitching over the last 30 days. Saw it again last night. Had a triple in the third inning, something like that. Then he came in off of a Nick Castellanos absolute moonshot. So I really like that. Robinson Cano, I know he didn't do a lot last night, but another low ownership type of play because I don't think Seattle's going to be highly owned tonight. 309 ISO versus left-handed pitching or right-handed pitching over the last 30 days. 354 WOBA. And I can't believe I'm going to say this, but if Daniel Descalzo finds his way into that Arizona lineup, he's probably one of the only – I would probably throw him in with a mini sack against, like, Paul Goldschmidt or somebody. You know, I have a little bit of interest in this Arizona team, but I don't know if I'm going to fully stack them yet. Maybe some mini stacks or a couple one-offs.
Sounds good. Brandon Phillips is on freaking fire since the break. 9 for 16, 5 doubles, a homer, 5 RBIs, 4 runs in these games. Now, doesn't have the greatest BVP numbers against John Lackey. He's 9 for 39, 2 doubles, 7 strikeouts. But again, I'm willing to overlook that for the fact of how hot that Phillips is right now. Mentioned Brian Dozier. Oh, I'm sorry. I mentioned Luis Cessa going for the Yankees. Sucks against right-handers. So Brian Dozier, who led off the All-Star break in the first two games with home runs. I like him a lot tonight. He got on base a couple times last night. Got shot by a flat-footed Aaron Judge in right field last night, which was not cool, but
yeah, no kidding. One more guy, Javier Baez, 413, 188. He's only $2,500 on FanDuel.
I'm sorry, keep rattling players off. Whit Merrifield has actually been pretty good. He was hitting well before the break. 4 doubles in 4 games since the All-Star break. Had an RBI double last night. I like him. And then going up against your boys tonight, Carlos Asuaje, quickly turning into one of my favorite players in the league. But here's the deal. I think this is more of a GPP play. Not a power hitter at all. He's just going to slap the ball down the line everywhere on the field. He's a very good hitter. But, I don't know if the smartest thing is to pay up at a premium for him tonight. But, again, not a bad GPP play at all.
Yeah, you're looking for him to absolutely just go bananas. And you need to include that in a Padres stack if you're going to play him, in my opinion.
Yeah, I like it. The kid's a really good hitter.
Yeah.
All right, let's move it over to third base. Again, same thing as what I was saying with Dozier, where Cessa sucks against right-handed bats. Miguel Sano could be an interesting play. No, he hasn't really been hitting that well since the break. Call it home run derby laps, call it what you will, but tonight could be a good night for him to get off the schneid.
Yeah, I kind of like that play. Right-handed power in that ballpark always seems to play.
Yeah, 2 for 14 since the break, so let's pick it up, Miguel. Come on.
I mean, I kind of like Freddie Freeman against John Lackey.
Yep, I like that.
I mean,
mention that
everybody was worried about him moving to third base and what this would kind of go. I'm finding it. I mean, it's him, it's Nolan, it's Franco, it's Turner, it's Castellanos. Those are kind of my guys. What is Todd Frazier's BVP against Clayton Kershaw?
It is. I have it right here. 3 for 13, 2 doubles, 4 strikeouts.
No home runs?
Nope.
Damn.
Hey, you know, there's always time. Sorry, Jersey boy. I can't roll with you tonight, but good luck.
Yeah.
Good luck. Don't know how we could forget Evan Longoria. 8 for 16 since the break, 2 doubles, 2 homers. He's looked extremely well, hitting the ball all sides of the field.
You know how we can forget Evan Longoria? Two reasons. One, he plays for Tampa Bay, although we actually kind of like playing Tampa Bay because they're pretty sneaky.
They do lead the AL wild card right now.
They do by 1.5 games, and that's actually very, very good. Baseball is better when the Tampa Bay Rays are just pounding the Yankees into submission.
I don't know, but you know, I'd rather the Phillies do it, but because then that would mean that we're in the World Series. But yeah.
Well, no, not with Interleague anymore.
Sure.
But because he's in Oakland.
Yeah, I mean, he homered there last night.
Yeah, but that was a one-off. Throw him in as a one-off, that's fine. But I can go get the same guys for cheaper and better ballparks at the same ownership.
See, I did not even see Longoria's ownership last night, and I really wanted to play him.
It was under 7%, I think.
Yeah, you would have to think so.
I mean, it's low.
I mean, he's hit in every single game since being back from the break.
Okay, so he's due for an offer.
Oh, don't do that. He's got a hot wife. He's got hot confidence.
He's got bukus of confidence just oozing out of the pores.
I'll fish you out. Hey, did you mention Anthony Rendon?
No, because I don't like Anthony Rendon right now.
Oh, my goodness. 8-for-13.
Hey, when the Nationals try to pop off with the best third baseman in baseball type of scenario.
You can't take that personally.
I can when I can play Nolan and he just does a lot better.
Whatever. Maybe this will change your mind.
What did Rendon do yesterday?
He homered. They had a day game.
I know they did. That's what I was asking.
Yeah, I mean, he homered anyway. Anywho, he's got a 722 on base percentage since the break.
Okay.
Yeah, that's good.
So there's just
8-for-13 with 5 walks, 3 homers.
I keep popping off with the ownership plays, and I keep forgetting to follow my own advice. This is a 15-game slate tonight, guys. You don't have to worry about ownerships.
Very true.
So don't worry about it.
All right. Any other third baseman?
Mike Moustakas is kind of interesting going against Matt Boyd.
Okay.
The
Moose Man.
Maybe Jed Jerko. And Kyle Seager has started to turn it on over the last couple games. I know it's Brad Peacock, but it actually kind of looks like the Mariners have a little bit of good history against Peacock. Seager is 7-for-20 with a double and a home run and only 4 strikeouts against him.
Yes, Seager had that big homer and extra innings last night for the Mariners to put them up of the lead. And
that was Danny Valencia.
Well, no, they went back-to-back. Didn't they?
I thought Danny Valencia's was a 2-run bomb. I could be mistaken.
Maybe Seager hit it. No, I think they went back-to-back.
I thought Seager hit the one to tie it.
I don't. When I saw the highlights, I was in and out of sleep. But, hey, I'm a late worker. I don't mind that. And then Ryan Healy's numbers against left-handed pitching are fantastic. He's going up against Blake Snell tonight. Snell could be a popular option, so you could. I think
Snell's going to be popular.
No.
But this is something to think about. Ryan
Healy.
Well,
I would say more popular than usual.
Ryan Healy over the last 30 days, 110 wOBA, 0 ISO versus left-handed pitching. Matt Chapman, exactly the same.
Really? Chapman's been hot the last couple of games.
So, but they're not hitting against left-handed pitching. This team is not hitting versus left-handed pitching. That's why I say this. Another guy that has double dong potential that hasn't looked right since the All-Star break is Jake Lamb too. So
interesting. I don't know why I didn't mention him at the top, but again, going against your boys, Corey Spangenberg here from the East Coast Philly area. He's looked great at the plate. I know he's had 5 strikeouts. That's not that great in 12 plate appearances. But
This is a guy that we didn't mention at first base.
He's put together some good games.
Yeah, this is a guy that we didn't mention at first base because I completely forgot about him. Will Myers went 0-for-5 with 4 strikeouts last night.
Jesus.
That is not going to happen that often. I am not afraid to go bounce back on him tonight.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And it's strictly a move like, okay, this guy has traditionally killed us. It seems like him, Paul Goldschmidt, Buster Posey, and Justin Turner are just guys that within our division just murder us. I'm not afraid, you know, as a one-off in like a Rocky stack if I'm not playing Mark Reynolds to go with a Will Myers. So I had a lot of Will Myers last night, and it didn't turn out well, but, you know, I'm still not afraid to go back to it.
All right. Let's talk about shortstops. Frankie Lindor, his 8 hits since the break, lead all shortstops in the majors, 3 doubles in that span as well. He gets a matchup against Ty Black today. AT&T Park, not the greatest hitter's park, but certainly some gaps for Frankie to hit tonight.
Yeah, I don't mind that. Trevor Story.
Yes.
Let's talk about him for a second.
A rejuvenation of sorts.
No freaking kidding. back-to-back games where he's had, I don't want to say double-digit fantasy points, but it has been.
Go ahead, just say it.
Double-digit fantasy points.
He's I say that shit all the time, game. Man.
Two hits. He's had 4 hits, 2 doubles, and 5 RBIs. In each game, the games coming back. He had another walk last night. The dude looks good. Like, he's putting better swings together. I think he had a strikeout last night, but that's only one in the last 2 games. I can't overemphasize the fact that, you know, this is a guy that we were counting on at the beginning of the season, and I think him missing the latter half of last season kind of stopped the learning curve. Now it's, let's see if he can make adjustments. I'm willing to ride the hot bat while we get it, especially with him being in Coors.
Yeah, I don't mind. You know, Trevor's got that good pop that we're all looking for. He's always a guy that's very low owned. When, you know, even when we got Rocky stacks, he's not a guy that typically gets there. But you'd probably know better than I would. Maybe that boost there from Pat Valeka maybe woke Trevor up a little bit. Like, hey, you know, maybe this shortstop thing isn't as locked up as I thought it was.
I don't think it was Pat Valeka that did it. I think that you're onto something, but I don't think the guy that had him, you know, kind of going was Pat Valeka.
That would be
Brendan Rodgers.
Okay. Who the hell is that?
That's exactly.
Is he in AAA?
He is in AA right double now. A. But he is the Rockies' number one overall prospect and one of the top prospects in baseball. And during the MLB Futures game, he was the best player on the field.
Interesting. What's his timetable up to the majors? I mean, like, can he play anywhere else?
He can, but the problem is you have a Gold Glove second baseman and the reigning batting champ at the other position.
Very true.
So he's a Pat Valeka type, you know, but he's a better prospect. I mean, the Rockies farm system is actually kind of loaded, but, you know, Trevor, make no mistake about it, Trevor's got power, but he's got to cut down on the strikeouts and he's got to start hitting. The only thing that's kept him in the lineup consistently this long all season has been the fact that he has played very, very, very good defense. So, but there's a lot of talk about him going back down to AAA to kind of get his bat right and, you know, readjust. So hopefully he's starting to make that turn, because we all know how big of a fan of Trevor Story I am.
No, get out of here. You?
Addison Russell is one of the hottest hitters in baseball. And when this guy's hot, he gets hot, and he's $2,500 on FanDuel.
Ad Rock. Yeah, I like that play a lot. Going up against the lefty today in SunTrust Park. Really like that play a lot.
Breaking news. Paul DeJong has homered in 3 straight games.
Yes. He loves the Mets. This is 4 homers in 4 games that he's hit against them. And it's like, the numbers are insane. Like, going into last night, I think he was like 9-for-13, 4 homers, like 9 RBIs, something ridiculous like that. I'm sorry, 3 homers going into last night, and then he homered last night. So, my goodness. Yeah, I don't know. The Mets must have, like, told him he sucked at a workout or something, and he always remembered. It's amazing how that works, but
no kidding.
Good for Paul, because coming out of the All-Star break, DeJong did not look good at all. Like, every, you know, he was one of the guys that was like, hey, you know, while you guys go on the All-Star break, can I, like, still play? And yeah, he just he's just been crushing the Mets. So yeah, why not, man?
Yep.
He's not even over 3,000 on FanDuel, right? At shortstop.
He is 2,600.
2,600. My goodness. Yeah, so that's a fantastic value there. Yeah, I don't really have too much at shortstop today that I was crazy about. You touched on the guys that I was thinking about. So
let's just skip to the most loaded position in the majors right now.
Pinch hitters.
Outfielders.
Let's do it. All right, your boy Blackman leading, well, tied with Gregory Polanco for 8 hits, which is the most out of all outfielders since the All-Star break.
Yeah, the home run derby curse sure didn't work there.
That homer that he hit last night was insane. Who the hell was going last night? What the hell is this? Why can't Perdomo? I remember they had him. The catcher had him set up high and in. And then he just absolutely missed, like, down near the dirt. And Charlie,
yeah, by 2 feet.
Off the freaking facade in there. That was a nice shot.
Yeah.
I like
that. That was
hey, crazy. Charlie's the one Rocky you'll never hear me bitch about. Like, Charlie, whenever I roster Charlie, like, we got that Kershaw kind of thing going, me and Charlie. It has to be the beard.
It's got to be something, because Charlie Blackman is the best leadoff hitter in baseball right now. And there's George Springer's the only one that could even be close to being in the conversation.
Georgie,
and
massive disappointment last night.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. He's the table setter, and there's no, I mean, really it's been, three guys that have carried this Rockies offense all year. It's been Mark Reynolds. It's been up until about a month ago. Now he's starting to hit the ball a lot better. But it's been Charlie Blackman and Nolan Arenado. Gerardo Parra had a home run last night. He's another guy that I really like playing right now because he is on fire. I mean,
you did. You called that yesterday. Good one.
It's just there's a lot of outfielders tonight. I'm just looking at them here, and I mean, the top 35, I mean, there's legit probably 35 outfielders tonight that you can play.
Let us discuss. And here's a good one, too. And I've been wanting to – I noticed this day one after the All-Star break. But Jabari Blash, this is a guy who I don't think anybody really
– raw power. Wow.
Like anybody is even thinking of. But since the All-Star break, he's been crushing 6-for-15, 4 extra base hits, 2 homers, 6 RBIs. I mean, every game he's doing something that makes you go, wow. Like,
he even did the hurdle splits last night and almost freaking tore his freaking leg off.
He, on Sunday, which was his worst game of this stretch since the break, he hit a ball – like flat-footed Oppo Field that hit the top of the wall late in that game. Just something that made you say, wow. So, yeah, if you want that exposure to Coors Field, I doubt many people will be on Jabari Blash. I mean, I don't even think – like on a 3-game slate, I don't even think people would be on him that much. But since we got a 15-game slate today, I think that would be certainly a good way to go. One guy that I think is pretty interesting tonight, Billy Hamilton. Now – 6 hits, 3 games since the break. That's fine. But I know Robbie Ray is not good at preventing steals or anything like that.
Which is very weird for a left-handed pitcher.
Very. Absolutely. But if he could get on base against Robbie Ray, I think that's a fantastic low ownership play. Again, you want to go, if you're going with Kershaw and trying to get away from those Ray ownerships. Because I have a feeling Ray will probably be a lot higher owned than Kershaw tonight. But game theory wise, you want to go that way, get a couple stolen bases. I don't think that's a bad way to go at all.
Probably not. let's go to some value options here. Maneris Sierra's backup for the Cardinals going against Rafael Montero. I don't know where he's going to be in that lineup, probably towards the bottom, but he's only 2,200. Yasiel Puig, he's going to hit in the 8th spot, but you think I really care?
Keith, I know you don't care.
Exactly. 426 WOBA, 327 ISO versus left-handed pitching over the last 30 days. sign me up. And, yeah, because Jabari Blash is more than Yasiel Puig. About 1,000 more.
Yikes.
So, then, you know.
Hold on. Wait, with, I just wanted to add one thing to your Puig statement there. You know, when you look at teams like the Astros or the Dodgers or the Nationals or something like
you're
that.
You're going to get low ownership.
Yeah, like, you know, obviously you don't want to, you know, it's not the greatest idea to use these players at the bottom of the order. But with teams like that, that are going to hit.
And score a ton of runs, and they're on the road. And with the Dodgers, you're adding in the fact that they can't really, quote-unquote, pitch around him because he doesn't have the pitcher behind him. I mean, add that into it. I mean, plus – okay, so here's the thing that we haven't really talked about. I think I talked about Todd Frazier and his BVP against Clayton Kershaw. Guys that are on the trading block, ladies and gentlemen – right now, do not overexpose yourselves to them. If you're playing one or two lineups, keep them out of your lineups. Guys like Todd Frazier, JD Martinez, some of these guys that are going to be on the move, do not overexpose yourself, because we've seen it time and time and time and time again that people will get pulled in the middle of games once a deal is close. It happened with Tulo a couple years ago when the Rockies were in Chicago. It happened, like, last night when J.D. Martinez was pulled, we all thought he was gone. Like, everybody on Twitter just thought he was gone because there was a top prospect for the Nationals that got pulled
at
the exact same time.
Hmm.
And it just happened to be coincidence or whatever.
Interesting. I didn't even hear about that. The prospect.
Yeah, I tweeted about it. Actually, no, I talked about it in Slack. So these guys that are on the trading block, do not overexpose yourself, because if they get pulled in the third, fourth inning because they're getting traded, you're done. So it's just kind of one of those things. Now, there's going to be guys that we don't have any idea about that aren't even being talked about on the trading block that are going to get moved. It happens every single year. But we're 12 days away from, or we're 13 days away from the trading deadline. People are going to start moving really quick, and some of these bigger names are going to be moved like that. So Todd Frazier, JD Martinez, those are guys that are not going to be in a lot of my lineups. One thing that we do have to, that I am interested in, Carlos Correa got hurt last night. He came out in the middle of it, his bat.
Awkward occurrence.
Yeah, and he's been kind of dealing with it since the 4th of July when he came out with the thumb. I think it's the same thumb as what they were talking about. There's a chance that they could put Marwin Gonzalez over at third.
That's who filled in for him last night, right?
Yeah. Or they could move Yuli back over to third, because Yuli came up as a third baseman, and move Bregman to short. So that's kind of how they did it last night. So there could be, quote-unquote, four outfielders for the Astros in the lineup today. When you add in Jacob Mariznick, George Springer, I'm forgetting the other guy.
In the outfield. Aoki.
Josh Reddick.
Beltran.
No, Beltran. They evidently held a funeral for Beltran out of the glove last night. So,
I was looking. Josh Reddick was the other guy. Some stats, and I just had to rattle off names. So
yeah, Josh Reddick was the other guy, and also Aoki. So there's
you know, I love me Aoki. He was featured on the opening day podcast.
Yes,
featured for Aoki.
Yes, he was. So,
Looking at some of these other – oh, I'm sorry. Were you finished with your
– I was going to pop off with another guy, Ryan Reaver, and $2,300.
Sorry, man. Yeah, I'm looking at stats, and I'm like trying to blah, blah, blah.
There's a lot of outfielders, so we're not going to touch on all of them.
Well, but I think value is important today, especially Kershaw, Ray owners out there. But I don't vibe well with this guy at all. He never produces for me. But Chris Young, good BVP against Hap, 4-for-14, a couple doubles, a homer, also 4 walks. So, you know, that looks like he's seeing
his left-handed pitching, by the way.
Yeah, it looks like he's seeing him pretty well. So I think that's a guy. Now, Jay Hap is not ranked very high at all today in terms of pitching. And
what are you talking about? He's the highest on our ranks.
On yours? All right. The ones I'm looking
DFSA,
at.
DFSA grade, he's the highest. He's above.
Okay, good. Well, I'm glad the BVP works there. But, yeah, the ranks that I use, he's not ranked highly at all. But,
well, that's because there's this stigma about Boston. Now, the issue is Boston doesn't strike out a lot. So that's the issue. And remember that my numbers take into the account what the teams have done over the last 30 days. Because I think Kershaw would be ranked a little bit lower just because of the fact that the White Sox came out and absolutely crushed left-handed pitching to begin the season. Well, right. They're not doing that anymore. So it's like we said yesterday, I don't care what a team did in April and May. I want to know what they've done in the last 30 days. At this point in the season, I'm only about the 30-day numbers for offenses. So
Here's one that I will attempt to blow your mind with, but Dexter Fowler. No, he hasn't done that well of late, but again, we talked about everything going on with Montero, allowing a ton of base runners. The Cardinals have actually been putting Fowler in that 3-hole lately, which is an interesting spot for him. But again, the guy can get, you know, prior to the All-Star break, there were a couple of games. Well, actually, prior to him getting injured, he was absolutely tearing it up. Now, granted, a lot of those games were against the Orioles. But again, I think against a pitcher like Montero, if he gets on base a couple times, try to get some stolen bases out of the guy. I think he can come around and score a couple times. I really like the Cardinals a lot tonight. So
the problem is if he gets on base with the way that Matt Carpenter's getting on base, he's got a freaking anchor in front of him.
Mm. Yeah.
That's the only issue. And I love the thought. That's the only issue I see, because Matt Carpenter does not steal bases, but they are not taking Carpenter out of that leadoff spot. And right now, Tommy Pham is hitting so well in that two spot that they're not taking him out of that two spot. So it's funny. Guys can hit in the one, they can hit in the two, but nobody can hit in that three hole.
That is right.
I don't understand that.
The three curse in the STL. We need to call in our resident Cardinals expert, Chip Meyer, for this one.
Oh, what? So he can bash everything? All right. Well,
that'll do it.
We're an hour and a half into it.
You got to keep, because remember, the recording goes for a couple minutes before we talk. But I don't even think we really talked that much before the before the pod today. And one more also, the outfielders too. Shin-Jin Chu, Nomar Mazara going up against Bundy.
I don't mind going back to that Texas stack. I know it didn't pay off last night. Lo and behold, Cashner, Tillman, and there's what, 3 combined runs in that game?
Yes, 4 or something. Yeah, but you're right. It was a handful. We'll leave it at that.
Yep.
But yes. So we will leave you here, folks. Again, catch us in the Slack channel if you're a member of the Army. If not, check us out. Promo code WIN, W-I-N, gets you 7 free days on DFSArmy.com. As I mentioned at the beginning, this is a great time to get involved with us, because even if you're a golf fan, or even if you're not a golf fan, the Domination Station can make up to 150 lineups for you for the Open Championship going on this week over across the pond, I believe. So it's a major, so I'm gonna definitely have some lineups in this sumbitch. Can't wait to do it. Definitely gonna use the Domination Station to do so. You could also use it for NASCAR and all sorts of other sports as well. And then too, if you like what you see from the 7-day free trial, or you like to dive into stuff without even thinking about it, use the promo code podcast and you can get 20% off each month of your subscription. A lot of great deals that we got going on here for cheap for you to get involved inside the DFS Army. Podcast tomorrow? I don't even know how many games there are. No podcast tomorrow?
No, all right. Not on Thursdays. Or not on Wednesdays and Thursdays.
Wednesdays and Thursdays. All right, cool. So not going to have those. So we will be back on Friday with the full slate podcast for you. Then I'll have my game by game breakdown and game notes out probably, probably like 4:30, 5 o'clock today. And then Wednesday and Thursday, I will have the breakdowns for the afternoon games, nothing for the main slates. But don't worry, you have got plenty of information to get you through with everybody else here, with Keith, Burnsy, Chop, Donuts, and our boy Chris with the free squares. So, or David, I'm sorry, with the free squares.
Boom.
I almost pulled the Redskins owner on them, where yesterday he was calling Kirk Cousins Kurt instead of Kirk. Boy, they just keep disrespecting that man left and right.
Yep, always.
Indeed. All right, we go. Peace.
Peace out.